Writers often talk about finding beauty in things that other people don't necessarily find so attractive, and that appears to be the case for my next guest. Poet Rosemary Dombrowski's new collection of poems is called The Philosophy of Unclean Things. It comes out this fall. Dombrowski is the founder of Rinky Dink Press and a senior lecturer at ASU's downtown campus. Rosemary, welcome.
Hi, thanks, Mark.
So tell me about the title of your new collection, The Philosophy of Unclean Things. Like, what does that refer to?
Well, I thought about that before I came in because I had a feeling you'd asked me. I was raised by a germaphobe, so I think at least subconsciously that's where the title came from. And most people know me to have germophobia. I think I had a textbook case of it by the time I was in my 20s. And it's better today.
You shook my hand when you walked in today.
I did, but then I went to the restroom and washed it. So no offense.
No, none taken. None taken. So, I mean, in these poems, you sort of look at life through the lens of germophobes and other kinds of conditions like that. I don't mean to use condition as a pejorative here, but how did you get that lens? I mean, I assume that you do not have all of the things that the protagonist, I guess, in your poems sees the world through.
Well, I have been interested in various kinds of disease and decay for a long time. And that probably harkens back to my first book, which is a sort of lyrical ethnography of autism, because it's a culture that I'm sort of an honorary member of, given my son's severe autism. So again, disease, decay, cognitive disability, those are things that have interested me for years. But I think just from a larger perspective, difference, just acknowledging difference and exploring difference through lenses that most people would consider odd and not necessarily find appealing.
Well, so how do you look through that lens and come out the other side with something that you want to put on paper?
Well, I think anytime that you're exploring things that people are sometimes reticent to talk about, that's something to be proud of on paper. So for me, it's a celebration of oddity. It's a celebration of difference. It's an opportunity to look at these things from a human perspective and come out on the other side maybe even more human, better understanding the ebb and flow, the process of decay and regeneration. I mean, it's a very human process. I just like to look at it from a microcosmic perspective because I think that's what a poet is supposed to do. I think you're supposed to put things under the magnifying lens or the microscope and look at them in a more intense way to get others to look at them at all or think about them at all. So, I mean, we have to be OCD, basically, is what I'm saying, in order to do this kind of work.
Well, so what are some of the, I mean, you talk about, you know, using poetry and putting it under a magnifying glass. What are some of the challenges and what are some of the opportunities in doing that in poetry, which is in many ways shorter and fewer words? You have to be a little more concise than, you know, just writing a short story or a novella or even a full-on novel.
You know me, and so you know that I'm obsessed with poetry in general. I'm obsessed with poetry as a form, and I like the short form because I probably have a little bit of ADHD as well. So it works for me, but I think my goal has been over the last 10 years to use poetry as a vehicle for telling these kinds of stories to prove that poetry can be used as a vehicle for telling these kinds of stories. It's not the archaic art form that people think it is. I'm seeing a resurgence of slam. I think everybody is over the last decade. We've certainly seen more popularity of that. There's lots of YouTube channels. High school kids are competing in slams all over the country now. So I think that this is just another way to expand poetry's visibility and expand its valuableness in the marketplace.
Is it a tough sell? I mean, even though like slams are becoming more popular, people are still reading poetry, obviously. Are you still fighting sort of a perception problem?
I think we always will because there's the perception that the poet is all ego. I think that's probably our biggest battle right now because everyone assumes that the novel writer and the fiction writer isn't necessarily writing from a perspective of self-knowledge or understanding or awareness or that the protagonist is them. When you're dealing with poets, the assumption is always that the protagonist is them and the speaker is them. And so I think some people have an aversion to it for that reason. You know, all these poets do is talk about themselves. But the self is a gateway into humanity, into understanding humanity. The issues that we deal with as individuals are gateway individuals that allow us to connect with other people and to feel that human connection that I think poetry fosters.
You referenced your first book, which is about life with your nonverbal autistic son called The Book of Emergencies. What led you to write that?
you know, just him being diagnosed with autism and me living with it for so many years behind closed doors, I was just writing the poems probably for therapeutic reasons. And I didn't really have any intention of turning them into a collection. I would read them around town. I inadvertently became known as the autism poet, in addition to being a germaphobe. So I've had lots of wonderful labels attached to myself. I think after, you know, several years of reading them, I started submitting a couple here and there to various journals, and some of them got picked up, most of them didn't, and I just kept writing them when I needed to. I wasn't really thinking big picture. I wasn't really thinking, I'm going to tell our story like a memoir, but in poetic form. But eventually, when I had the opportunity to get it published, when a publisher wanted to look at it, that's what I realized I had the opportunity to do. I could write that mom memoir without writing a memoir. And that, to me, was the most important poetry, the most important thing poetry could do for me at the time.
So did you find that you would have, for example, a particularly hard day, and, you know, at the end of the day, you'd be, you know, thinking about what had happened, and a poem would come to you? I mean, were these mostly after bad days, or are there some good times recalled in there as well?
I think they're at the end of almost every day. There's probably hundreds of those poems that aren't in the collection because that's the only way I know how to process life. I actually have a degree in anthropology as well, so ethnography is an interest of mine. So the idea of immersing myself in a culture and then being able to record that culture as sort of an honorary insider is something that's always appealed to me. I may not have been cognizant at the time that that's what I was within the autism culture. I was writing because I needed to write, but now I see that I'm sort of an ethnographer of autism.
When you went through the process, you'd written these poems, and when you were thinking about maybe putting them into a collection, were there any poems or any aspects of your life or your son's life that you were hesitant to sort of share with other people, to have others see?
Oh, definitely. There's loathing in that collection. There's self-loathing. There's loathing for other. There's loathing of the disorder. There's borderline loathing of my son because there were days, months, years that were that challenging. And so I think that's a difficult thing to lay bare. Whether you're doing it in a memoir or you're doing it poetically, everyone assumes that I is you in both of those spaces. So that's another way in which those genres are very similar. People are going to read that and assume that that is you speaking, and it is in those poems. And I think what I gave myself license to do, and hopefully other mothers and other family members and caregivers to do, was to admit that sometimes it is really ugly and it is really difficult. And it can be a brutal life, but it can also be beautiful.
Was that a tough thing to accept for yourself?
It was, but I'm much more yin and yang now because of it. I'm much more ebb and flow. I'm much more decay and regeneration. I don't think that there's the day that goes by that I'm not considering those binary oppositions and those forces and how they work together in my life and how they work together in the larger world. And it's given me an interesting lens on everything.
Rosemary Dombrowski is founder of Rinky Dink Press and a senior lecturer at ASU's downtown campus. Her forthcoming collection of poems is called The Philosophy of Unclean Things. Rosemary, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Mark.